Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, May 27, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, It's Back to Business, University of Illinois, Fall Plans, Smaller Class Sizes, More Online Options, by Jeff D'Alessio Urbana. Nothing's close to final, but U of I administrators hope to offer a type of instruction this fall that's some sort of hybrid of in-person and remote delivery, Provost Andreas Cagularis wrote in a mass mail Tuesday to faculty and staff. We are evaluating scenarios based on that possibility, but if conditions require us to move to a more fully remote semester, we must be prepared for that as well, he wrote. Even with an expected smaller starting residential population, we will need to implement a number of additional significant steps to reduce the population density in physical spaces to meet the levels recommended by our state and local health officials. Because of social distancing requirements and issues related to airflow, ventilation, and other safety considerations, Cagularis said U of I officials anticipate traditional classrooms being limited to about 25% to 30% of normal capacity. That means more online options will be needed than are currently available. We will need to develop approaches that offer class meeting opportunities to offset the space limitations, he wrote. This goal can be partially achieved by more efficient utilization of these spaces. For example, extending the extra instructional day, scheduling class meetings during traditionally lower used days and times. But more online options are going to be needed. These new space limitations, in combination with the expectation of a number of students and faculty who are unable to be physically present on campus, will also require us to provide a significant amount of material online. Also a consideration, the likely need to modify schedules to allow for more passing times between classes, to reduce congestion and density in hallways and public spaces, he added. Cagularis said plans are fluid and may be revised even after a mid-June decision on how to proceed for now. If the virus doesn't continue to curve downward, the decision to return to the model put in place this past March, April, and May is one U of I leaders will not hesitate to make. Cagularis said several unanswered questions will help drive the process going forward. Among them, how do we determine which courses and programs have the greatest need for in-person delivery? How do we accommodate faculty and students who cannot be on campus this fall due to health concerns, travel or visa restrictions, personal concerns? How do we ensure that we deliver educational programs through all methods that are equitable, accessible, and fair? How do we give our departments and colleges the flexibility to ensure the best academic outcomes in ways that are consistent with our shared governance principles and practices? How do we ensure our faculty and instructional staff have the flexibility to run their courses and to choose the delivery method that best suits their goals? How do our instructional and residential decisions impact the community around us? I know the uncertainty surrounding such important decisions can be unsettling and frustrating, Cagularis wrote to faculty and staff. And while this update may not give you all the answers you would like at this point, I hope you will find it helpful and informational to see how we are proceeding with our plans and evaluating the options and considerations that factor into these decisions. It's back to business. Illinois impact, promising new numbers from local positivity rate to deaths statewide. We seem to have come off the peak, Governor J.B. Pritzker said Tuesday in announcing that all four regions are well on their way to advancing Friday to Phase 3 of his Restore Illinois plan. Since May 1, the central region, that's us, has the lowest positivity rate of the four, 2.7%, well below the 20% max for moving out of Phase 2. Of 824 tests over the three-day Memorial weekend in Champaign County, 21, or 3%, came back positive. The four zip codes with the most cases were the only ones to add to their totals Tuesday. 61866 Rantoul, up 1 to 144. 61821 Champaign, 2 to 105. 61820 Champaign, 3 up to 98. And 61802 Urbana, 1 up to 80. It was an encouraging Tuesday all around. Exhibit C, state deaths for the week ending May 16, 780, were down from the week before, 790, a first. I'm hopeful this is the beginning of a downward trend, IDPH Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike said. First in a series, Restore Illinois. Detailed pledge just part of a plan of hair salons reopening plan. Ben Sichterman, Champaign. When Ipatsu Salon reopens Friday, customers won't be able to wait inside before their appointment. But rest assured, nobody's going to be standing in the rain, owner Rebecca Bettinger said. The lack of a waiting room is just one of several steps Ipatsu is taking ahead of its reopening, allowed in Phase 3 of the state's Restore Illinois plan. Benninger typed up a 17-point pledge for Ipatsu's stylists to follow, including spacing stations 6 feet apart, installing dividers when that's not possible, and checking the temperature of staff and guests. Everyone will also be wearing masks. High-touch areas are being sanitized before and after guests touch them, and blow-drying services will be limited. We've gone above and beyond. We hope to set a good example that others will follow to keep everyone safe, Bettinger said. We need our community to be healthy. After being closed for more than 2 months, Ipatsu started taking reservations at 1 p.m. Tuesday before its Friday opening. There's definitely no shortage of clients, Bettinger said. She said she's excited to get back to work, but I'm definitely thinking, proceed with caution. We're a little bit of a canary in the coal mine. Marketplace Mall. Lines to get tested at drive-through site nearly non-existent. By Deborah Pressey, Champaign. The drive-through coronavirus testing site at Marketplace Mall has administered thousands fewer tests than it could have since it opened May 19. In fact, the lines have been so short, the expected waiting time is not an issue, said Incident Commander Mark Bixel with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. Most of the time, there's 20 people or so in line in the mornings, and at lunch, there's a dozen or so there's no wait at all, he said. You come up and within a few minutes, you're in there, it's very efficient. As of noon Tuesday, there had been 1,499 tests administered at the state-operated testing site since it opened a week earlier. It can handle 750 coronavirus tests a day, but it's averaged about 150 a day, Bixel said. The testing is being done for free, and it's available to anyone who is going out of their homes to work and anyone with a chronic health condition. How long this testing opportunity will remain open is a decision that hasn't yet been made, Bixel said. He wants all who may be holding off on testing out of fear that it may be uncomfortable to know this is a painless, self-administered nasal swab. It is not uncomfortable in the least, he said. It's a very easy test to administer. Parents can administer it to their children. Testing is available 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. 7 days a week. There was no line around 12:45 p.m. Tuesday at the state-sponsored coronavirus drive-through testing site at Marketplace Mall in Champaign. Ask the administrator. Question. I have been sheltering in place, and at some point, I know I want and need to start being with my family closer than 6 feet apart, as well as enjoying golf or even going in a grocery store. How do I make that transition? I am older and therefore have some risks, so have all the precautions of the past 10 weeks been a waste if I want to hug my grandchildren? Answer. This is the really difficult part. The virus is still here and active, and therefore the risk has not diminished. You can safely go to a grocery store and golf while following all of the infection control guidance. You can visit your grandchildren while using masks and social distancing. Hugging and physical contact can still not be done safely while the virus is circulating. This is because there is asymptomatic transmission, so we cannot be sure that someone who appears to be healthy is not still infectious. This is one of the most difficult parts of this. State guidelines for personal care services. With phase 3 of the Restore Illinois plan set to kick in Friday, the state this week issued guidelines for 10 industries set to reopen. Here are a few highlights beyond the standard social distancing, sanitizing, and face covering rules for personal care services, including hair and nail salons, barbershops, and spas. No walk-ins allowed. It's reservations only until further notice. No magazines or shared items in the waiting area. And if practical, no waiting area at all, instead having customers wait off-premises. Maximum capacity, 50% of what it was pre-pandemic, or 5 customers per 1,000 square feet of usable space. Workstations must be at least 6 feet apart, and if possible, separated by impermeable barriers. When they report for work and at mid-shift, all employees should be given wellness checks, which involve taking temperatures and screening for symptoms. Urbana City Council. MCOR work forcing removal of mature trees, but city set to plant 47 new ones in their place. By Ben Sichterman, Urbana. The city of Urbana will be removing several mature trees along Green Street between Busey Avenue and Race Street as part of the MCOR project, despite a recent petition to save the canopy. In their place, 47 new trees will be planted along that same stretch, City Administrator Carol Mitten said at Tuesday's City Council meeting. Construction has already begun on the east end of the project, so it was too late to save 10 trees in that section, Mitten said at last week's meeting. But she agreed to take another look at 9 trees slated for removal in the west end of Green Street in Urbana. During Tuesday's meeting, Mitten and City Engineer Justin Swinford walked through the details of each of the trees and why they are on the list to be removed, from hollow trunks to root damage that's expected from the construction. As part of the $47 million MCOR project, which aims to support different modes of transportation, Green Street is being reconstructed in Urbana as the last of 5 phases. The project received about $16 million in federal grants that Mitten said the city risks losing if it doesn't complete its portion this year. Any further delays are going to imperil our ability to meet the construction schedule and will put that federal grant at risk, she said at last week's meeting. Mitten and Mayor Diane Marlin also said the city has taken steps to preserve as many trees as possible, negotiating successfully with 28 of 30 property owners to let the city route sidewalks around the trees. The fact that it's going to have curving sidewalks from Lincoln to Race is going to make it unusual in itself, and that reflects our commitment to saving as many of the trees as we possibly could, Marlin said. Swinford also said some trees needed to be removed so sidewalks and ramps could be upgraded to meet accessibility requirements. The sidewalks and the ramps along Green Street aren't that great, Swinford said. It's actually a state requirement that we improve the sidewalk ramps to make them ADA accessible as part of this construction project. Nonetheless, the petition started by Urbana resident Laura Haber received more than 800 signatures. The planned action seems to be a tremendous waste of one of Urbana's most valuable and beloved features, the petition states. And Ward 5 Alderman Dennis Roberts said the replacement of mature trees with new will be detrimental. It's going to be a completely different feeling as you enter the city residential areas compared to where it is today, Roberts said. The effect is going to be significant. Champaign County Jail, 20-year-old held on invasion, shooting, battery charges, by Mary Shank Urbana. An Urbana man who allegedly pistol-whipped an ex-girlfriend and shot at her current boyfriend is being held in the Champaign County Jail. Urbana Police Lieutenant Dave Smysore said Nigel M. Lee, 20, of the 1300 block of North Lincoln Avenue, was arrested about 3 a.m. Sunday when he left his apartment. He is charged with home invasion, aggravated discharge of a firearm, unlawful possession of a firearm, and aggravated battery in connection with events that happened about 10 p.m. Thursday at the apartment of his former girlfriend. Smysore said the woman, who lives in the same complex as Lee, reported that Lee was arguing with her via text messages earlier on Thursday. About 10 p.m., her current boyfriend was leaving when he saw a man with his face covered by a mask carrying a gun in the parking lot. Lee then entered the woman's apartment, and although masked, she immediately recognized him from having dated him 2 years. She told police he hit her in the face with a gun, but she was not seriously hurt. The current boyfriend had doubled back to check on her, and he and Lee then got into a physical fight inside the apartment. Smysore said Lee allegedly fired a single round at the man, which went through his sweatshirt but missed his body. Lee ran from the apartment, and police could not find him Thursday or Friday. By late Friday, they had obtained a warrant for his arrest. Smysore said patrol officers watched his apartment late Saturday and saw movement. They arrested him when he left Sunday morning. Judge John Kennedy set bond on Lee's warrant at $1 million. Court records show that Lee was out on bond from a 2019 misdemeanor, aggravated assault, that he was charged with in December, and a felony forgery he was accused of committing in late February. If convicted of the most serious of the charges filed Friday, Lee faces 6 to 30 years in prison. Traffic stop. Man faces drug fleeing charges. By Mary Shank Urbana. A 33-year-old Urbana man who sped away from police investigating shots fired early Tuesday has been charged with having drugs he allegedly intended to sell. Joseph Lee Reed Jr., who listed an address in the 400 block of East Elm Street, was also charged with possession of a controlled substance and aggravated fleeing and eluding. Assistant State's Attorney Dan Reynolds said about 1:40 a.m., Champaign police went to Marigold and Joanne Lane's to investigate reports of gunfire. They saw several vehicles leaving fast, including Reed's. An officer initiated a traffic stop on Reed, who slowed and began to pull over, but then sped off, going so fast that his vehicle went airborne, crossing Neal Street. He subsequently lost control and crashed into a yard in the 1400 block of North Walnut Street, Reynolds said. The officer who tried to stop Reed found the vehicle abandoned and heard running through a backyard. He found Reed, whom he recognized as the driver, hiding in a woodpile behind a nearby house. The officer found Reed with $3,110 and the keys to the wrecked vehicle. His license is also revoked. In a later search of the car, police found 2 grams of suspected crack cocaine in several smaller bags, 1.5 grams of suspected ecstasy, and a pill bottle with about 10 grams of cannabis. Judge Tom DeFantis set his bond at $50,000 and told him to be back in court June 23 for a probable cause hearing. Reynolds said Reed had several prior convictions for possession of cannabis and controlled substances, driving under revocation, and resisting police. Reed is currently on parole for delivery of a controlled substance and out on bond in another unresolved felony case in which he's accused of fleeing from Champaign police in December. Opinion, Jim Day. Republican insurgents organized to challenge Democrats' majorities. In session last week for House and Senate Republicans in Illinois, they've been down so long in the General Assembly that being run over by Democrats is the rule, not the exception. They represent a superminority in both the state House and Senate to the Democrats' supermajorities. In other words, they're outnumbered and outgunned, and that rarely turns out well. Now a new group of Republicans has come along in the Illinois House, the Taxpayer Freedom Caucus, that represents a minority of the GOP's superminority. It hopes to change the long-term political fortunes of the GOP in this Democratic-controlled state by promoting effective solutions to statewide problems that include high property taxes, school funding, and support for people in need. The Republican Party in general needs to do a better job of giving people a reason to vote for it, said State Representative Blaine Wilhur, a 38-year-old Republican from Effingham. Just saying Mike Madigan sucks is not the message. Madigan, of course, is the 78-year-old powerful Speaker of the Illinois House, in office since 1971 and Speaker for all but 2 years since 1983. He's a repellent figure to many Illinoisans, particularly Republicans. At the same time, Madigan is a master political strategist whose winning ways and legislative acumen have helped him turn Illinois into a solid blue state. Acknowledging that we've got to start somewhere, Wilhur hopes to lead a movement that will cut into the Democratic supermajorities in the House and Senate. But first, he and his acolytes have to get organized, develop policy positions, and try to sell them. Just getting off the ground has been challenging. Wilhur announced the formation of his group May 21, identifying 20 of the 44 House Republicans as members. But 4 members, State Representatives Terry Bryant of Murfreesboro, Dan Swanson of Alpha, Charlie Meyer of Okawville, and Tony McCombie of Savannah dropped out after Republican leader Jim Durkin expressed concerns about a new caucus within his caucus. Wilher attempted to alleviate Durkin's concerns. He said that he didn't ask for Durkin's permission to form the caucus, but gave him a heads up. He disavowed interest in leading a coup d'etat. "That's not what we're trying to do," he said, emphasizing that his group will focus on formulating effective policy and not on internal party politics. For his part, Durkin is publicly welcoming the group, with a spokeswoman saying he supports the new caucus and looks forward to their participation. The Taxpayer Freedom Caucus's message is a simple one. Illinois is in deep financial trouble, and Republicans need to offer viable alternatives to the miserable status quo. Everybody can see the systems in Illinois aren't working, economically, ethically, and everything else, Wilher said. We need to show voters solutions and how those solutions can benefit them. Illinois was in dire financial straits before the coronavirus pandemic that led to the lockdown that devastated the economy and caused state revenues to collapse. Last weekend, legislators approved a $42 billion plus budget that includes a $6 billion deficit. The budget plan depends on borrowing $5 billion from the Federal Reserve and repaying that loan with pandemic financial aid that the federal government is providing to 50 states that include Illinois. In the statement announcing formation of the Taxpayer Freedom Caucus, the group contended that the pandemic has exposed the failure of the current economic policies in Illinois. If we had taken the proper steps to control spending, reform our structural imbalances, and eliminate the influence peddling in our government, we would be in a much better position to deal with the emergencies, and our children and grandchildren would not be burdened with an endlessly oppressive tax system, the group said. The caucus's policy approach stands in direct opposition to policies advocated and passed by Governor J.B. Pritzker and legislative Democrats. He has embraced dramatically increased social spending, as well as a series of tax increases to pay for a variety of new and existing programs. Pritzker has proposed a progressive income tax amendment to the Illinois Constitution to replace the currently mandated flat tax, billing it as the solution to Illinois' financial problems. Wilher said Pritzker's progressive income tax has to go down. As for other policy positions, he said, we need to figure out how we're going to speak as a group. State Representatives John Cabello and Joe Sosnowski, both from the Rockford area, will serve as the group's chairman and vice chairman. Many will regard it as a pipe dream, but Wilher said his ultimate goal is to build a GOP majority in the legislature. He acknowledged that's a tall order, but said, you've got to start somewhere. I think there's a reason why we're at 44 members, and it's not because everybody loves Democrats, he said. We've got to do a better job of giving people a compelling reason to vote for Republicans in a state that is naturally inclined to elect Democrats. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, May 27, 2020. Please stay tuned.